Great to see everybody tonight. And I want you to know that I take care of my people, and I have said, please turn down the thermostat, because this is warm in here tonight. And so they're going to help us. What's that?
And it feels better already.
Does it? It's just psychologically, you think. He said it's going to be colder, so it is. Wow, so I need that on my phone too, so when I'm up there preaching, I can just adjust the temperature for you guys in the audience. So I am worried about our event on Friday. We had so much good momentum building up to that, and then that COVID bug hit Matt, and I'm just worried about trying to rebuild that momentum. So I'm not going to repeat everything. In fact, I don't know anything fresh I can say. I think I've heard me say everything that I could say to plug that event for you. But just remember all of that and come on Friday. I think I think you're going to be really, really helped by the things that Matt has to share with us. So if you can't bring someone with you, bring your kids with you. And it is 10 minutes till 10. I don't know what to make of the clock right there. I will have no capacity to pace myself at all tonight. All right, Matthew 16, pick up with me at 13. I just want to read a little bit of this episode with you. 13 says, now when Jesus came to the district of Caesarea Philippi, he was asking his disciples, who do people say that the Son of Man is? And they said, some say John the Baptist, others Elijah, but still others Jeremiah, one of the prophets. And he said to them, but who do you say that I am? Simon Peter answered, you are the Christ, the Son of the living God. And Jesus said to him, blessed are you, Simon Bar-Jonah, because flesh and blood did not reveal this to you, but my Father who is in heaven. And I also say to you that you are Peter, and upon this rock I will build my church, and the gates of Hades will not overpower it. I'll just pause for the sake of time there. Really, really powerful, important passage that we could just spend a lot of time working the content. That's not my point tonight in the context of this class, because we're watching Jesus as a teacher. And what method is he using here as a teacher? Yeah, thank you. Yeah, he's working with questions, as we have suggested is a useful way to interact and talk with people. What question are they dealing with here? Isn't it interesting that Jesus doesn't ever say, what do you think of my teaching? Do you like it? Do you think this works for the crowds? Should I maybe tweak my message? You know, he never asked his disciples that. Because of this issue, right, Anthony? If we know who he is, then what he says really doesn't matter. I mean, it comes from the Lord. It is what it is.
You know, there's two different questions there.
Yeah, there are. And that's kind of where I'm headed with this. It's interesting that he doesn't say, okay, I am the Son of God. Do y'all believe that? What does he do instead? He asked them these questions. What are people saying about me? And they kind of kick that around and talk about it a little bit. And you're right, Richard. The next question is different. The next question is, but what do you think? And of course, who's always going to be the first guy to speak up? One of his moments where he gets it right. Yeah, Peter speaks up and gives the right answer and is commended for it. I wanted you to watch Jesus operate in this episode because I think he's showing us another kind of question. And that's what we've been working on recently. Just as we wade out into our circle of friends and we try to plant a seed, we're thinking of some questions that can grab some conversations and maybe turn them into opportunities. And I want to talk about another kind of question tonight that I think is at least similar to what the Lord is using here. I want to talk to you a little bit about leading questions. I'm imagining some of you have heard this before. As an attorney, John has probably even used this before.
No, you're not allowed to.
You're not allowed to? Oh, yeah, you do kind of get slapped by the judge for that. In fact, as I was prepping this, I was thinking, I'd let John talk about this. He'd probably be so more suited to talk about leading questions. So there are two pieces to a leading question, and I want you to notice this with me. The first piece of it of a leading question is a target. There has to be something you want to lead people to. Does that make sense? Maybe a destination would be better, but that's a cool graphic, so I use target instead. Maybe, what kind of things would we want to lead people to in a conversation? Maybe I have a truth that I want them to believe and embrace as true. How about on the negative side? Did that lose y'all? Can you tell me more, David? I would be so proud.
Help them see some error in their own.
Yeah. What if they have a flaw in their logic or an area where their thinking doesn't line up with Scripture? Maybe I want them to see that. What's Jesus' target in Matthew 16? Yeah, he wants to know that they know who he really is. He wants them to see that truth. And so ultimately, our objective with everyone we're talking to is to lead them to see truth. And so one way to do that is to ask them questions, which is the second piece of this. We got to figure out some questions we can ask that will get them where we want them to go. Now, how many questions we ask really kind of depends on what we're wrestling with, what it is we want them to see. For example, we've used this illustration before. If someone were to say to you, there is no absolute truth, do you see a target? What is it? That is a logically flawed point. Be nice to help them see that. And actually, you can help them see that by asking one question. Are you absolutely sure that's true? You see it? Yeah, I know it's kind of snarky, but that is the point. You could actually ask one question that would expose the flaw in their thinking. It's actually a self-defeating argument. If there is no absolute truth, why should we listen to what you're saying? Sometimes it's not that simple. Sometimes we might have to ask a whole bunch of questions that sort of lead somebody up to what we want them to see. So it would probably be easier for me to give you an example, and I'll borrow one that we've been working with throughout the class several times. Go back to the person that says to you, oh, Church of Christ, you guys think you're the only ones going to heaven. Do you see a target when someone says that? Something we want them to see when they say that?
What the Bible says you have to do to be saved, or who's going to be saved.
I want them to see what the Bible says is required to be saved. Good. What else do we want them to see? You guys think you're the only ones going to heaven?
It doesn't matter what I think.
It doesn't matter what I think. Yeah, we touched on that one before too. Thank
you.
What is it?
That they know what I believe without ever having talked to me.
Yes, that's one preconception that they're bringing to this. Good. What else? Yeah.
Ask them why they think that.
Okay, so we're hunting a target right now. So before we get to that, what do we want to help them see? What's the destination? You see what I'm asking? Is that confusing? Yes, sir.
How to get to a Church of Christ?
What's that?
How to get to a Church of Christ, though?
how to get to a Church of Christ. Maybe, how to get them to Christ, I would be more comfortable saying that. Yes, Anthony.
Perhaps the flaw in that statement.
What is it?
That just because you're Church of Christ doesn't mean that you're...
How about this notion that because you go to worship on Sunday in a building that has Church of Christ on the sign means your ticket is punched? Do any of y'all believe that? In fact, is it okay for me to say that I'm pretty certain I've gone to church with some people regularly who did not have their ticket punched, right? It's awkward, but true, right? I don't like that. That's another preconception, as John was talking about. What's he bringing to the equation, this idea that we think that? The other thing that kind of bothers me is I think what prompts people to say that is our belief that there are religious people who are going to be lost. By the way, do you all believe that? I think everybody believes that, except maybe an atheist, because he doesn't believe anyone's going to be lost. But I think virtually everybody draws a line somewhere. For example, when people press me on that, I'll just say, how about Satanists? Are you good with them? And of course, people say, well, it's absurd. No. Obviously, Satanists are good. Okay, so there's a line, right? See, everyone ultimately draws the line. What they're really unhappy with me about is where I draw the line, right? So I would like to work that without having what happen? Yeah, I don't want their shields to go up and I don't want them to get defensive. So someone shared this with me years ago when I was a college student to use as a way of responding to this, and I just thought it was absolutely great. I think I even shared it with y'all before, but I want to use it again in this context because I want you to see how this works as a series of leading questions. This guy said, what I say in response to that is, I bet you and I believe exactly the same thing about that. Now, I love saying that because what does it do to the other guy? What's that? It does throw them off. It's like, oh, surely that can't be true. No. I love being unexpected because sometimes when you talk to people, they want to pigeonhole you and it's hard to get through to them. And so if they find out, well, wait, maybe I don't really know. I believe you and I believe exactly the same thing about that. So here's the first question. He said, ask them, do you believe that everyone who does the will of God will enter the kingdom of heaven? Where'd that question come from? Yeah, it does come from the Bible. In fact, it's almost an exact quote of what passage? Who knows? Don't Google it. Disown it if you don't know it. Matthew 7:21, not everyone who says to me, Lord, Lord, will enter the kingdom of heaven, but the one who does the will of my Father in heaven will enter. Do you believe that those who do the will of the Father will enter the kingdom of heaven? I have never asked somebody that. They didn't say, well, of course. Okay? Second question. Do you believe that those who do not do the will of the Father will not enter the kingdom of heaven? What did I just do? I took the same verse, just made it negative, but it's exactly the same point. And it's exactly what Matthew 7:21 says. In all my years when I've been confronted with that and used those two leading questions, I've never had someone disagree with them. Everyone's right there with me. And when they agree, I said, well, we believe the same thing about that. We need to do the will of the Father. You see how that works? But along the way, the value of what we're talking about is that the approach is more gentle to what was intended to be a provocation. And so we've sucked the negative energy out of the conversation, and we've actually ended up in a place where maybe now we can have a conversation about what the will of God is. Do you see how it works? Okay? It's a leading series of leading questions. I have a target, a destination I want to get to, and I'm going to ask some questions to help people get there. Now, let me say some things about leading questions and be upfront with you about this. First of all, this is more offensive than the other two questions. Did you hear the way I said that word? Sorry?
Offense, not offensive, but offensive.
Not offensive, as in let's hurt their feelings.
Pronunciation makes a difference.
It does. But offensive in that this is way different than just saying, tell me more. Or tell me why you believe that. Because when we ask questions like that, remember, we're kind of putting the ball in their court, and what's our job? Yeah, now I'm just listening and collecting data and trying to figure out where to go. It's not that my brain isn't functioning, but boy, it's a whole lot easier to do that than to do this, because now I'm trying to think, okay, in this conversation, what is it that I'm going to need them to see? And now I've got to think about how I'm going to help them get there. So we have to work a little harder when we're working with this kind of leading question. The upside of it is, though we're going on the offensive a little more, it still comes off gently because we're using what? Really? Questions. Thank you. Y'all scared me there. I thought, what have I been doing the last month? Yeah. Because it's questions, it comes off in a more gentle tone. If we are careful about our tone. And when you get to leading questions, that's really, really important, especially like when you're trying to help someone see a logical fallacy and you're leading them over the edge of the cliff to where their position is about to die and fall off the edge. You don't want to be snarky about that. Someone says, there is no absolute truth. You don't want to say, ha, is that absolutely true? How does that come off? Like you're a jerk, right? Which does what to people? Thank you. It raises their defenses. Our goal is not to make people look dumb and silly, and our goal is not to expose their error. Our goal is to help them see truth and have a productive conversation. So word choice and tone, I think, really become important when you're working with leading questions that are taking to someone somewhere that they are not anticipating. Secondly, working with leading questions is also harder because we really, really do have to do a lot of thinking. First, I've got to figure out what that target is. And then when I know where I want them to go, I think, okay, how do I get them there? What is the route we need to take? What are the questions I need to ask? And then, I don't know about you, but the sequencing of the questions sometimes becomes really important. There are some things I need to ask first, and then second, and then third. And so there really is a lot of thought involved in working well with leading questions. So here's a recommendation I want to make about that. I think this is a whole lot easier if you kind of anticipate the kinds of things you're going to be talking to people about. Is that possible? Why?
You need to get to know the individual.
If you get to know a specific person, you kind of know how their mind works and what kinds of things are important to them.
We've all had these discussions before and blown them, but that means we know what sort of issues get raised.
Let me ask you a question. Have you watched the news the last 2 days?
No.
Okay. Do you know what happened in Washington this week that's a really big deal?
Yes.
Okay. What are you likely, if you're still out in the work world, what are you likely to be talking to other people about over the next week or two?
Abortion.
Yeah. So if the topic of abortion comes up, do you have a target? Something you'd like people to see? If you were talking about abortion? Like? Yeah, see, now you gotta pause and think about it. That wouldn't work in the moment, right? Because we have that 10-second window to grab it or not. So that's why I'm saying it would be good right now to be thinking about abortion. You know the thing that I really want people to see whenever the subject of abortion comes up? It's the line they draw between the born and the unborn, okay? That's an arbitrary line. We just decided one day, yeah, baby who hadn't been born yet into a human being. Okay, but wait, how did we come to that conclusion? So when people talk about abortion, I'm always trying to think, how can I get them to think about that? And what questions could I ask to get them there? Oh, so you're okay with with abortion, tell me, when do you think life begins? That might be a good starting question. What's that? And just kind of start walking up through. Does that make sense? Are there other issues like that that we can anticipate coming up in conversations as we wander around our world these days? What are some of the other hot topics? How about transgenderism? Yeah, there's a whole lot of conversation going on about that with the college swimmer person and controversies about that and some of the efforts to teach that in the schools. People are real concerned about that. Yeah, you should probably be ready to talk about that. What do I want people to see on that? What's a good target? And how do I get people there? How about the thing we're going to talk about Friday? And y'all didn't think I could get another Friday plug in. How about the problem of suffering? Have any of y'all ever talked to somebody who said, I just don't get how there could be a God ruling over this world with all this bad stuff happening down here? What's the target when that comes up? Think of any? Well, yeah, I mean, that's a, and there are a couple of ways to go with that. So what is the source of suffering? Why are people suffering? Whose fault is it? When people blame God, that's always the question I'm thinking about. Curious as to why you think this is God's fault. Help me with that. I want to get them to think about that. So here's what I would suggest to you. I would suggest getting a journal if you really want to be good at this. And in the journal, devote a page in it to questions you've encountered, especially if you weren't really sure how to respond and what to say. And then go through the process we've described tonight. Okay, so if they're talking at work about transgenderism, what's a target or a couple of targets? Some things I want them to see. And then two, how can I ask them questions to get them there? Does that make sense? Y'all following me on that? Create a journal and write it down. And especially, John, were you saying earlier that we've had these failed conversations that didn't go well? If one went badly and it ended up, you know, people throwing rocks at each other and mad, think, okay, all right, what did I do there? Where did that go wrong? And how can I make it more effective the next time? I keep a journal of the kind of things that people are talking about. If you go to a Church of Christ, what question are people going to ask you? If people know anything at all about us, why don't y'all have any music in that church? That is so weird. You got an answer for that?
I was asked, is everybody still covering their heads?
Interesting. Interesting. Shows, again, misperceptions that people have. So it requires a little more work to do this. But the third thing that I want to say about leading questions is we really want to do that work because these are powerful, powerful tools for teaching people. Curiosity, can you see why it would be that this series of leading questions would be a particularly convincing way to teach people?
It gets them thinking themselves. Instead of you telling, they actually get to stop and think for themselves. Okay. Maybe they got a point.
It's a way of showing my work. Does that make sense? You understand what I mean when I say that? I'm not just telling them the conclusion. I'm walking them through the thinking that gets me there. And because I'm asking questions, I'm not even telling them anything at all. They are seeing how that conclusion is reached and understanding the logic and the reason that's behind it. So when I first started thinking about this, when I was reading Kokel's book, I started looking at my own teaching and I discovered, especially when I teach kids' classes, this is basically my default teaching method. I even realize it. I'd go into class and I'd say, okay, I got about two things I want them to get when we're done tonight. And then my outlines would literally be a series of questions I would pose to the class. And my notes would just be what I need to fill in if they don't get it. But it would be, here's the first question I'm going to ask, the second question I'm going to ask, the third question I was going to ask. So it's actually something I've used in class. Now you're going to start watching for it, I know. But over and over and over again. I think it's a very, very powerful way to teach. So this will be harder than just saying, so tell me more. But it is a very convincing way to help people see truth. Yes?
Well, I guess it's them participating in the process rather than you just lecturing to them or, you know, sitting there just being told they're journeying with you and getting to that conclusion.
It's a conversation.
Yeah, and even push that, you can even push that even a niche further. They're really making their own journey to truth. We're just sort of putting the signpost on the path and say, okay, take a turn here now. And now look down this path, really. Isn't that right? And when do we learn the best? I mean, okay, honestly, how much of this are y'all going to retain? We can have fun. I can ask you what the four words on the slide Sunday were. Well, I'm not going to do that because I don't want to cry in front of y'all. But what's that?
Worthy need.
But the point is, I'm always happy if folks can get 2 out of 3, right? That's kind of a passing grade. But when we learn it ourselves, it tends to stick and we hang on to it. And I think this is actually a method to help people do that. Yeah, Rick?
I was just going to say, you know, we do this naturally as parents when we help your kids with homework. Like in math, you don't just go, the answer's 32. You say, so what do you think you would do next? Well, what about this part? And you just try to keep them, because it doesn't matter that they know the answer's 32. It matters that they know
how to get there.
How to get there, and then they believe the answer's 32.
I think when you kind of pay attention to yourself, you find out that you may actually do this more than you think you do. It's a very effective way to help people teach. Let me work with an example since I brought this up a minute ago, and see if that makes us a little more vivid what we're talking about. So if you attend a Church of Christ, you need to have some preparation to talk to people about instrumental music, okay? How many of y'all have had people ask you about the fact that we don't have any instrumental music, okay? As a preacher for a church without a band or a piano, I always get questions. Visitors will come up, having seen me in the pulpit, and they'll say, so, what gives? Why no music here? Don't blame me, that's the way they say it, okay? Because to them, it ain't music unless there's a band up there, right? And so, what's our first impulse when someone hits us with that? Dude, where's the music? We already know what Troy's is because he said it. We do have music. What's our first impulse when people say that? Just the knee-jerk reaction. What's that? Yeah, just the knee-jerk reaction. Remember, that's our go-to. We have no authority for instrumental music in New Testament worship. By the way, just go ahead and say that in German because they're not going to understand what that means anyway, right? There's all kinds of code language in there, guys, that all makes sense to us. But to the vast majority of the rest of the world, we didn't say anything. They don't have anything. They don't have any idea what all that means, right? And when they do pick up that it isn't just that we couldn't afford a piano, but that we actually don't think you ought to have a piano, now we've went from strange to profoundly weird. And defenses go up. It doesn't go too well. So, let me ask you a question. Someone comes to you and said, now, why don't your church believe in music? Do you see a target there? Is there some place I can take these people, something I want them to see? I know this is hard because it's in the moment. You got to think about it. Yes?
I will ask him, why is it so important to you? I mean, why is that makes it so important?
Okay, why do you think it's so important? Okay. Think about a truth that we would like them to see, or maybe something in their thinking that we would like to correct. Don't start with the questions yet, but just what's the goal here? What's the objective? Yeah.
Well, I was just going to say, I would ask, what do you think the purpose of the music is?
So where are you headed?
What is it we're trying to do with the music?
Where are you headed with that?
What is the purpose of worship?
What's the purpose of worship? Where are you headed with that? What do you want them to see?
That God is who dictates what worship is.
Okay. I would really like people to see that this is not Church of Christ weirdness. This is about trying to honor God, because I think most people don't see it that way. I think that's really good. I think that's something to seek. Something else that's really important to me that I think is a compelling way to talk about this is to demonstrate to people that instrumental music is but one facet of a much bigger problem, and that is that we've made ourselves the focus of worship rather than God. And I think that is a compelling way to make this case. So because I get that question asked so often, I developed some questions to lead people to some things I'd like them to see on this. And I'll just pitch them out for you to consider. And if you, I've actually turned this into a sermon that I preach sometimes, and I'm happy for you to share it to you if you think there's some value in it. So when people ask me that, I'll say, oh, that's good. It's very interesting that you ask about. We people ask about that a lot. Do you mind if I ask you a question? My first question is, do you think it's okay to worship in just any way we choose?
Today, a lot of people would say yes.
So I almost always have people who will say, well, not just anything, because they're a little thoughtful, but I do get that sometimes. Hey, sure, whatever's good for you. Again, nobody believes that. Everybody has a line. And when I get pushback, I just say, okay, when I was in college, someone gave me an article about a church that had a stripper. True story. Well, not that. Okay, so we agree there's a line, right? It makes the point. I know it's kind of awkward, but it makes the point nonetheless. Everyone is going to draw a line somewhere. Nobody's going to say anything goes. And by the way, if that's a struggle, there's some pretty compelling scripture on that, going back to Cain and Abel and Exodus 32 and Israel and the calf and Nadab and Abihu and 1 Corinthians 11 and the Lord's Supper. And so if we need to pull a little text into that, it's not hard to demonstrate. It's never been okay to just do anything. There's always been a line, and God is the one that ought to be drawing it. So can we worship any way we choose? Question number two. Did God tell us to worship with instruments?
David did.
My answer is, it depends. It depends. Listen. We need to embrace the use of instruments in Old Testament worship because it helps us. It demonstrates that they did that because it was authorized by God through the prophet, 2 Chronicles 29, 25. It came from God. So it's not as though instrumental music is a thing that doesn't matter either way to him when he wanted it. He said that's what he wanted, and that's why we find it in the Old Testament. And then, oddly enough, we get to the New Testament, and nothing. And the interesting thing is, that's not just our weird reading of the New Testament. That's like a compelling historical fact. You go back through history, and for thousands of years, instrumental music was not used. And when it was used or introduced, it was introduced with a fight. When you start sharing that with people, guess what you find out?
They had no idea.
That is new information. Not aware of that. Just assumed it was there somewhere. So what have you just done just that far? What's that? Let's say it. Oh, the stone's in the shoe now. That's not in the New Testament. I'm going to go ask my pastor about that. That has to be there somewhere. I guess they're going to find out. It's not there. Question three, and I always like to throw this one in too. Can we just do it anyway? What do you think people say to that? I get mixed. Some people say, well, I don't know. And some people say, well, yeah, I really don't think it matters. And of course, the pushback on that is, yeah, but it always seems to matter in the Bible. And so how many great Bible examples are there where people got off the path and did their own thing worship-wise, and it doesn't work out so well? God is not pleased. And so think about David and moving the Ark of the Covenant and Nadab and Abihu and again, Cain and Abel. When people go their own way and worship their own way, it doesn't work well with God. And so that's where I think it's a great place to drop this idea that worship is not about me. It's about him. And I'm not a spectator. The leaders of worship are not performing for me. They are leading me, think carefully about my language here, they're leading me to perform before God. Do you buy that? Do you see what I'm saying there? We all together, when John leads singing, John is not performing for us. He's leading us to offer up something together to God. This is about him and it's about pleasing him. By the way, when you say that to a person who is religiously inclined, what do you think you're going to get from them? Okay, no, but would you just give them the idea that we're offered, we are supposed to be focused on him? How do you think people will react to that? Yes, I have found that people enthusiastically embrace that. And so it's real easy at that point to throw in the point. Listen, we're living in a world where people have turned worship into the entertainment hour. And I just don't think that's what it's supposed to be about. I think it's supposed to be about him and honoring him, not entertaining ourselves. I've said that over and over again in conversations about this. I've never had anyone push back against that. Everybody I've talked to said, yeah, absolutely, that's absolutely right. When you bring it up, they can see it happening in the religious world. So arguing instrumental music in that context, that it ought to be about God and not about me, I think it is compelling in our culture. I've even found that compelling with young people. So that's my answer. I would encourage you, we're going to have to talk to people about this, to get your journal and write your answer and be ready to talk to people about this. Okay? Someone have their hand up? Did I miss somebody? Yes.
So you're looking at it as approaching it as examining the proper method before establishing the absolute purpose of worship? Or would you ever go the vice versa where you say, okay, what do you believe the Bible states about the absolute purpose of our worship? Before diving into what are your thoughts on singing or whatever, establishing the purpose before the method.
Yeah, so my answer to that's going to be, it's going to really depend on who I'm talking to and what the moment looks like. So in fact, I'm glad you said that so that I could say this to you. Please don't ever feel locked into a rigid structure. Ooh, I got to go these three questions in that order. We anticipate and then we roll with the moment, right? And so that literally, that conversation may change. It is going to change every single time you have it with someone. What doesn't change are the fundamental ideas that I'm trying to use some questions to get them to see a couple of things. What do I want them to see? The worship is about God and not about me. And that means I ought to do what I know honors him and not what I want to do. And the only way I know that's by getting to the book, which I think where we started, wasn't it? I need to get God back, get him back to the book and to God. Yes, ma'am.
My pushback is always, no, I should, it's about him, but I show it. I constantly have these conversations, and then we bring up authority. It's, well, but we also don't have authority for cars. We don't have authority for the waterfront. We don't have authority for the air conditioner. And it goes like a whole different direction. And this is usually other churches of Christ or God-fearing people that I'm like fighting with, essentially, about these topics. And no, I'm not getting it. Everything should be worship about God. And I'm really not sure how to keep handling that pushback of, somehow I should be getting something out of worshiping and honoring the Lord. And so they constantly come back to me with that. God's there, but I should get something out of it too.
So let's be clear about that, that what I get is secondary and a byproduct of doing the first thing. Does that make sense? This is about honoring him. And so I'm going to do what he wants me to do. And by the way, if I am to derive what God intended, I've got to do what it was that he asked me to do, correct? But don't hear me say tonight, we don't get anything out of worship. But do hear me say, what we get is a byproduct of doing what he asked us to do. Does that make sense? When we offer up to him, we get the benefit back. And maybe an after-class discussion about all of the other pushback of where are the water fountains in the Bible. Hey, by the way, as you are going out, if you guys have a question you would like for us to wrestle with, we got about four more sessions left, and I'm happy to work with your questions too. We can figure out some good questions to ask.